Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adi Karna 3 page 60. Okay. These are natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage, which occurs before one reaches the perfectional stage of prema, love of Godhead. The reaction does not take place even after continuous hearing and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, may consider to be due to offenses only. That is the opinion of the Sandarbha. In the beginning of chanting the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about evading the 10 kinds of offenses at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reactions of feelings of separation will not be visible by tears in the eyes and standing of hair on the end. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.24 purport. Because you're dealing with the holy name, which is non-different from Krishna. So you're directly associating with Krishna. So the point that Bhagavatam's making is having that association, if we don't see that there's transformation of the heart, even though there is tears and standing the hair on end, then that means that's only due to offenses. Right? We have to be very careful. That's why we see that there's so much effort put on this point of the 10 offenses, you know, to the point where we see that in the, you know, in many temples that in the morning they'll chant Shukshastakam, but they'll also chant the 10 offenses, right? Because it's a very essential point. So the element is that one's being purified, right? So the point that by chanting the holy name, the heart is completely purified of all reactions to sin and all that, that's gone. But the point is reactions to offenses, that doesn't go away until the stage of bhava. And that means advanced stages of bhava. So that's why one has to be so careful. Yes?
So we can say that the holy name works on us despite our
qualifications. Yes.
But the thing is that if we sincerely want, but still, you know, it's kind of conditioned nature.
Yes, but still, it doesn't mean that there's not a reaction. It's just like the kids very, very, you know, that doesn't have a bad view on life and doesn't consider anything unpleasant and all that, but if they stick their finger in the fire, they'll still get burnt. Because the point is that it's a matter of taking seriously how important the devotees, the spiritual master, the scriptures, the understanding of the position of devotional service, having faith in devotional service, how much those are. Because that's the whole thing that's coming, is that there's no transformation. Like here, Prabhupada's pointing out is that the reactions will be the aspect of the tears in the eyes and hair standing on end. But at the same time, as the Bhagavatam's pointing out, despite that, if still there's no transformation, right? Because you'll have those that, when they chant, then they have tears in the eyes and hair standing on end. So that's coming from the separation they're feeling from Krishna by chanting, right? Because they're with, means you're associating with Krishna through the chanting, but Vipralamba, even though you're with Krishna, it gives a different flavor than if it's the mood of Sambhog. Does that make sense? So both you're associating with Krishna. One is directly, one's with his bhava form. Right? So one gives the feeling of separation, one gives the feeling of sambhog. So the difficulty that comes up is that, so someone by chanting, then these are automatically natural symptoms. But we can see is that for us, even that's happening, because you're associating with Krishna, that's why they're coming. Remember we were reading before, Rupa Goswami, then he's talking about that you have these like avasas, like bhava bhas and all these like the sankir and all these different kind of levels of it. That just by associating with the holy name, these things happen, even to a materialist. Right? These things happening, if it doesn't make a transformation of the heart in which we want to surrender more and be more absorbed in Krishna and take that step forward, then that's due to offenses. Does that make sense? So there's the element of them not being there when you chant, that is a symptom of offenses. That even if they do come up now and again due to, you know, some very nice arrangements and everything like that, and still there's no transformation of heart, that it's due to offenses. You understand? So the point is by associating with Krishna, these transcendental symptoms can come up. But the point is are we moving forward in our relationship with Krishna, or we're just saying that this is nice? You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Let us say you've made this wonderful arrangement for somebody. You know, it's just like, let's say it's a party for them, for whatever reason. So you've made this wonderful arrangement, and the person knows that you've made the arrangement, and they come in and they like the arrangement. You know, it's nice, but they don't mention to you about how nice it is and how nice that you've done this. You know, others are there, they're walking, oh wow, this is nice, but they never make it personal. You understand? So the whole point is experiencing the ecstasies, if you don't take it to that its connection to Krishna, then it doesn't take on that personal devotional element. You understand? So that's why you see in the Sandarbha here is that we're dealing with Krishna as the absolute, but it's being pointed out how he is the person. The person is the source of all these elements we call absolute. He's the source of eternity. He's the source of absolute. He's the source of unlimited and an all-pervading, all-knowing. He's the source of that, the person. It's not that there's that impersonal. Within that, there's the personal. That's how the Hindus talk about it. But it's the person is the origin. And that's why you get the effect. Otherwise, why would the impersonal give the effect? We're a person. Why would impersonal have an effect on us? Right? Only personal has an effect. Right? So that's the difficulty, is that it's there, and it's that it's very nice, but we don't take it to surrender to Krishna. It was nice. We get enthused in all this, and then we may get distracted by doing something material.
If we take the aspect of mercy in all this discussion.
Yes.
If it depends on our own desires, sincerity, and trying to avoid the offenses, so where is the mercy?
The mercy is if you do that, you get prema. It's just like this. Let us say you're going into a shop. You know, let's say it's like the grandfather's shop. Okay? And, you know, you're a little kid, right? So you go into the shop, and, you know, you're in there and, you know, yelling and screaming and throwing a tantrum and doing what little kids like to do, you know, whenever they're in a place where you're not supposed to do that, right? You know, you can sit at home peacefully all day, but you go out into the pub, then they have to make a scene. Okay? So that situation is all that. Grandfather will deal with you, you know, nicely. You're a kid, you'll deal and all that, try to make peaceful and all that, and be tolerant that, you know, your mom's there and, you know, all this goes on because you're a kid, you know, maybe didn't have a nap or they're hungry or, you know, something like this. Okay, now, let us say, so they're being nice and you're not making zero endeavor, you know, to that. Now let's say you're trying to behave yourself, you're in the shop, so you're behaving nicely and doing all that, you know, the best you can, and you know how good that'll be. It'll still be playing around, but it'll be, you're making that endeavor. So now, will the grandfather not give you something? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah. You know, it's based on relationship. It's not based on business. It's based on relationship. Yes.
I think one devotee, he mentioned that we can deserve mercy, but we can attract mercy, Krishna's mercy. Mm,
that's a nice, very nice. Yeah, very nice.
So we try for that.
Yeah, because the point is we're very small, you know. we're not as big as we'd like to think we are. Like that. So, yes, that's a good point. Does that make sense? So it has both meanings, that because we can say is, oh, but if the hairs, tears in the eyes and that, you know, doesn't that mean there's a transformation? That means you're in association with the name and you're somehow or another, you know, focusing on the name. But the point is that coming up, that there's not this mood to surrender and be more fixed on Krishna, that's due to offenses. Does that make sense? And also the point is that chanting the holy name that we're not immediately absorbed in Krishna, that's due to offenses. Right? So that's why the point of offenses is made so strongly to avoid. Because sin, you know, different kinds of aspects like that, piety, these aren't going to get in the way so much. Right? Because we'll say, oh, I'm so sinful. But actually it means I'm so offensive. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Because we put sin as bigger than offenses. Right? Let's say a devotee does something that would be considered sinful. Oh, that's a big thing. You know, they can't even step foot in the temple. Right? But if they're sitting there blaspheming other devotees and that, we're going to kind of just tell them, you know, chill out, don't be so annoying. You understand? But it's actually, the effect is the other way around. The other one name will get rid of it, and you know, means the sin, one name will get rid of it. But the other one, until you get to advanced stages of bhakti, it won't get rid of it. So we have to understand what we're dealing with. Why? Because you're dealing with the person. So that's why offenses are greater, because of the personal aspect. The other, they're mechanical. Does that make sense? You mechanically do things right, it's pious. You mechanically do things wrong, it's sinful. But offense means it's specific, it's personal. That's why it's more. Does that make sense? Yes.
We experienced now in the last years a lot of retreats and a lot of seminars on the culture of respect. Mm-hmm. Because after so many years, still we deal with each other very bad.
Mm. Yes.
And I was thinking, it's a good step, or it should be emphasis more on like culture of respect of the holy name?
No, it's all of the things. Respect is a principle. So if you don't have respect, you can't apply it specifically. Mm-hmm. Right? Means, let's say, okay, we're respectful to, the government officer or the rich man or something like that. Why are we respectful to them? Because we just have that inherent element of respect, or it's because we know if we're respectful we can get some benefit, and if we're not respectful there can be a lot of trouble. So it's not actually respect, because if we'll respect them but not others, we don't actually have respect. But, well, at least we're going through the motions that in one area we're willing to apply it, even though it may not be as deep as ideal. So that's why in the Vedic system is there, that even you're following the culture and etiquette externally, at least that's better than not following it at all. Right? We may say it's artificial and this and that, but the point is being in the material world is artificial for the soul. So at least if they're doing things that they would be natural for those on the spiritual platform, that's a better position. Even though it may not be sincere. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times you see in the common levels that, you know, simple people, they don't get into all these, you know, fancy kind of etiquettes. Or the intellectuals, they like to, you know, kind of like put them to the side. Oh, we're better than that. We're so smart. We're not just external. Even though it's a standard issue, is that, you know, you get a liberal arts degree, it comes along with the diploma. Is that particular false ego? I don't know. Maybe it's on the paper or something, and when you touch it, it absorbs into the tips of your fingers, something like that. That makes sense. Yeah. So the difficulty comes down is that we need to cultivate the respect on all levels. So therefore, respect in, you know, the Vaishnavas, respect to the holy name, respect to the scriptures. You could have a seminar that deals with all that, or a seminar that just deals with one of that, Point is that we're hearing about the culture of Krishna consciousness in the practice, and we're trying to take it seriously and apply in our life. It's always good, because when is that happening? In the association of devotees. So association of devotees is always good. Right? So it's a good thing. You know, so just be understood is that it's a good thing because it's sadhu sangha. It's not as good thing because in the modern context people have retreats and workshops and this and that, and that's why we do it. And as soon as the karmis stop doing that, we stop doing that. Then it's weak. Then we're doing it as a culture, as a Westerner, rather than the culture as a Vaishnava. Does that make sense? So ideally, our philosophy is Vaishnava and our religion is Vaishnava. Otherwise, then what will happen is our philosophy will be Vaishnava and our religion will be, you know, whatever culture we're from. Does that make sense? And so then there's always a problem there. You know, it's just like contemporary issues where we're worried about different things that the karmis are worried about in their day-to-day life, personal interactions, you know, in the workplace and politically and all these kind of things. Then if we're, you know, up in arms about those also, like the karmis are, but what's the basis of it? It's because our religion is that. It's not Vaishnava. Does that make sense? Bhakti already includes everything else. But you have to understand bhakti. That's the point. That's faith. Faith means by performing bhakti, all other things are included. But if we're thinking, no, bhakti's there, but we have to add all these social, political positions to improve the quality of bhakti, that means our faith is not actually that great. It's enough that we're in devotional service and practicing, but it's not enough that we become fixed in devotional service. And that becomes a prominent. And because of that, there won't be a taste. And if there's no taste, you got to get a taste somewhere. And so, you know, the social political position always gives a strong taste for those persons inclined towards that. You know, in other words, like I said, those with the liberal arts degrees. Yes. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, I didn't understand the distinction between offenses and sinful activities, because sinful activities are...
They're not offense. Why are they an offense?
The seventh offense...
Seventh offense is if you're doing them with the idea that by chanting I can get rid of them, then it's an offense. See, it's like this. Offenses we accept are bad. But in our mind, before we became the Krishna consciousness, that where's offense? Offense is a little social thing that, you know, you didn't wear the right clothes, or you didn't say the right thing, or you didn't shake hands in the right way, or, you know, stuff like that. So it's a minor thing. But sin, you know, morality is the main thing. Because when you're coming from the second platform of consciousness, pranamoy, morality is all you have. There is no religion. It is the religion. Mundane morality, that's a social morality, that is your religion. It's not based on Shastra and based on higher, on a theistic point of view. So, therefore, that becomes the most important aspect. So then you'll see much of the time we try to elevate sin up to the level of offense by saying it's offensive. Because the point is, it's a mentality that by chanting, I'll get rid of the offense, about the sin, therefore it's not a problem that I sin. That's what makes it the seventh offense. That he did something, a sinful thing, and he's chanting. We say it's that because we want to elevate sin up to a level that, you know, we think it deserves. And offenses that, you know, we can speak all kinds of nonsense against individuals, that we're just being practical, we're being straightforward, we're being truthful, we're being honest. You know, we put all kinds of nice terms to reduce offenses, and we use the philosophy to try to raise morality. And because of this, then culture is not very strong, because the problem comes is that, you know, region to region, the concept of morality is very different. Does that make sense? So then it creates a problem, because then you won't have any community. Community means common values, not common philosophy. Right? means you can say you have a philosophical community that you value the philosophy, but then that means you have to get into this, and that means philosophies first, and then our conditioned perspectives have to follow the philosophy. Then we can say it can make community. But if it's a matter of philosophy's there, and but time and circumstance, or yukta vairagya, we like to use those two. Those two aphorisms, you know, they kind of like, they're used to clear all obstacles to my opinion. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's a philosophy. So we just use the philosophy to clear the road for establishing our own morality. But it has to be, our morality is governed by the philosophy. Then that's theistic. Shastra says this, I'm thinking that. Shastra says this, I have to adjust my thinking to what the Shastra says. But if Shastra says one thing and my opinion is another, and I adjust the Shastra to support my opinion, that's not theistic morality. That's just social political morality. It's just the group agrees with it. Because you see, one group agrees, another group doesn't agree. It's not universal, although they always want to say they're universal. Right? That's always the thing. It's, oh, we're hitting the fact that everybody can follow, and modern people won't follow this. It's kind of like modern people voted for Trump. You know? Get with it. Get with the program. You know what I'm saying? All these countries that had these super liberal governments, the next election, they voted the opposite way. So that's the point, is modern person, today they're liberal, tomorrow they're conservative, the next day they're liberal, the next day they're conservative. They don't know. They're just trying to be happy. And they try one, it doesn't work, you try the other. You know what I'm saying? You go to Wendy's, you don't like it, you go to McDonald's. You don't like it, you go back to Wendy's. You know, and that doesn't work, you go to Taco Bell. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know. Yes.
I think in our tradition, the differentiation is that sin is connected to the gross and subtle body, mm-hmm. but offense is connected to the soul. So that's the major difference. And in other traditions, they don't discriminate on that level.
No, they don't discriminate. And another thing that really spins people out is that one of the obstacles, anartas, is piety.
Yes.
And so we'll find that if we preach piety, people will consider it devotional service. Because in you're dealing in world religions, piety is religion. They don't actually have philosophy. If you say, okay, let's take the Abrahamic. What is Abrahamic philosophy? Who's God?
God.
God. Okay. Who's the soul?
The soul.
Yeah, what is it? The body, the subtle body. If it's the subtle body, what do you need to bury the gross body for? You understand? They have, where's the, you know, like that. What's the material energy? You know, a place for us to enjoy. God gave us to enjoy. Okay. You understand? So we're dealing with religion here. We're not dealing with philosophy. You understand? So we don't actually aren't aware of philosophy. Then when we come in contact with it, then we mix it up. We don't see the difference. Therefore, being religious is being pious. And being pious means what I think is good, not what Shastra says, because that's theistic morality. Right? Because if someone says, no, in the Bible it says this, we have to do this, then people say, come on, get with it. You know? Don't be so archaic. So we're going to do the same thing. Gita says this, come on, well, you know, time, place, circumstance, you know, but who assigns that? Krishna? The Acharyas? Or us? So that's the difficulty. You know? So, yes.
I still haven't understood it properly, so I'll ask a little more. If someone out there in the secular world kills another person, is that sinful or is that offensive?
That's sinful.
Sinful. But it's another living entity in the eyes of the Lord.
Yeah, but it's just a sin. Then how would... then how would you define sin?
So what's the difference between the two? I'm not able to understand the way you're presenting it at the moment.
Okay. See, sin means you have the laws of nature, right? You have the modes of nature, you have the mechanics of how things work. Right? So, these laws of nature govern how things actually properly work. Just like, okay, let's say a coconut tree. Can I plant it in a bucket of, 40 weight oil? No. I have to plant it in the dirt. Right? But can I put dirt in my motor? No, you have to put 40 weight oil. You understand? So, following the nature of something and following the mechanics of that as is the nature of it as given by Krishna, following the nature, that's called piety. Not following that nature, that's called sin. Does that make sense? So that you're eating other animals is sinful because you're not supposed to eat other animals. You want to eat other animals, be a tiger or something. They're supposed to eat the animals. We're not supposed to eat the animals. So it's going against the religious nature of the particular living entity, the particular situation, the particular arrangement. That makes it sinful. And you follow it, that's called piety. So that means it has nothing to do with are making it up. We like it or not, or this or that. That's why you see the Vedic scriptures then talk about mode of goodness means that you're willing to accept these rules and follow them because you're supposed to. Right? And by practice, by knowledge, by study, by association, then you start to like to do them. Right? Where the contemporary is more, you start with I like. So you're starting with the end and trying to make that the beginning. Right? So a pious person naturally likes to do the right thing. And an impious person tends to not like to do the right thing. So they're looking at it, it's all a matter of like. You like to do this, I don't like to do this. So it's all about our like. No, it's about what are the laws of nature. You follow the laws, that's piety. You don't follow the laws, that's sin.
So in the eyes of our scripture, a person who kills another person, or a person who talks bad about someone else, the person who talks bad about someone is worse in that case. Like they're blaspheming a devotee or something. They're worse than
But the you mentioned about a karmi and killing a karmi, and then you switch over to a devotee blaspheming a devotee.
Yeah,
why not use the same example? The karmi kills a karmi, or the karmi, talks trash about another karmi. Killing him is worse than talking trash.
But in the eyes of our, this I have to understand it properly. In the eyes of our scripture, how do we look at it if we're following that?
It means if you killed a devotee, that would be even worse.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Keep one thing. Offense means, where's the offense? And it means you're talking trash about the devotee. Is that one of the 10 offenses? Is talking trash, the karmi talking trash about another karmi? Is that one of the 10 offenses? It says to blaspheme a devotee who's dedicated their lives for the propagation of the holy name. It talks about the spiritual master, seeing the demigods and Krishna on the same level. Talks about not appreciating the scriptures, talking bad about the scriptures. Talks about taking it that the glories of the holy name are imagination or that they're exaggerated. Right? Or you think that, okay, all sin could be cleared, therefore I can just chant and I can do whatever I like and afterwards I'll chant and everything's cool. Or I take it that being a nice guy and having community and everybody working together, lovey-dovey and that's the same as chanting the holy name rather than there are two different aspects. I take it that it's just as spiritual. It's just the same kind of thing. Or I instruct people in the holy name that don't actually want to hear about it, and therefore they just get more and more information that they can use against devotional service. Or I've heard about surrendering to the Lord and all that, and I know about it, but I'm not really interested in doing that, even though I know about that. No, it's better, and I see it's better, but I don't want to do it. Those are the 10 offenses. You understand? Other things are etiquette. See, because nowadays it's just, we just use the word offensive means I'm not pleased with it. But we're just talking about etiquette. You know, what, how you should behave, how you should deal, what you should do. And it's based on their specific morality of what you shouldn't do. Right? So that's the problem, is the modern context is morality and ethics is created by the social community and what they accept or don't accept. You know, it's just like, let's say, in contemporary kind of idea, boys and girls can go out and do whatever they like as long as a girl doesn't get pregnant. Anything short of pregnant is cool. I mean, don't, the father shouldn't know about it, you know. But it's acceptable. But who came up with that? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that that's been decided on the modern. You know, does that make sense? So that it's just a matter of community to community. They have different levels of this that they'll consider all right. You know, some community, you know, it's okay that they go out and all that, and there's a chaperone, and it's just pleasant, you know, kind of, you know, pleasant talking and all that, and flirting, and that's okay. And that, but that's, any more than that, that's not good. Other places, they get, you know, get the first pay, they don't care. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that different communities, they all have their different idea of what's all right. And within that community, it'll also be different individual to individual. So that's why this idea is that without Krishna consciousness, we're going to establish a sense of community amongst people from all over the world is a total illusion. Like that. Because it says, oh, we, you know, we just eat what we want to eat and all that. Yeah, but if you come from India, what do you eat? You know what I'm saying? You come from Poland, what do you eat? You know, the Poles don't eat what they eat in England. So when we say international food and dress, we mean America, England, and Australia. Right? Unless you have some couture, and then you'll add in, you know, Italy and France. But otherwise, you won't.
Then you have to exclude America.
Sorry?
Then you have to exclude America.
Yeah, then you have to exclude America. That's the problem. Then you have to kind of exclude the Anglo-Saxons. You know, maybe New York can stay on the map, but everywhere else has got to go. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes up is, on the material platform, there is zero common position between everybody. Zero. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Yes, you can try to even the field by destroying any traditions and any values and any respect for authority that anyone has. And then claim that you have to respect authority, meaning them, who is destroying these things. So then how is that either, you know, how is that a pious religious position? That's impious, because you're breaking down authority, you're breaking down tradition. You know, does that make sense? Because any Western tradition is coming from Christianity, so that means it's based on religion. Like, well, like your example that you're giving, "Thou shalt not kill." You know, would that be as strong a point? Let's say if we were taking, the Genghis Khan and his hordes, would that be a bad thing? No, go out and kill people. That's normal. But you'll get killed if someone comes to your house and you don't host him. Literally. When Genghis became, you know, in charge, they accepted him as their leader. That was one of the rules. You don't follow the tradition they have. You die. Someone comes to your house, you don't host him proud. You die. Yeah. You know. Yeah. So they take that as worse. So we're only saying that because of the Christian background. You know, the Judaic background, then it would be a question, was it a Jew? If it wasn't a Jew, what's the big deal? You know? You know what I'm saying? And the Muslims, it seems to be amongst the fanatics, it's part of the, you know, part of the, you know, process. You know? So that's the thing, is that just by saying that, it shows the background. And therefore, that's why it becomes difficult, because we have these proportions of what's important and not, and we put emphasis to one area or not. So the thing is yes, it's there. You know, means if killing animals is bad, killing bugs is bad, why wouldn't killing humans be worse? Right? And then within that, we just take it all humans. But then in the Vedic, it will make a distinction about who they are. So that's why you see is when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed, his father pointed out that you're saying he insulted a Brahmin, and that's bad. You know, you don't get much worse than insulting a Brahmin. But at the same time, by killing an emperor, that's equal to killing, I think, 10 Brahmins. Because the point is, or more, because the king protects all the Brahmins. So by him going, now Brahminical culture disappears. Does that make sense? So you have to also know within it, because what's the goal of it? Because we're just looking at it, you know, killing's bad, therefore no one will kill me. That's the basis of it. Rather than killing's bad because humans, it's the opportunity for spiritual life. And so therefore if someone loses that opportunity, that's what's bad. Right? Because otherwise you have a war, we don't say it's a problem. You know, oh yes, no, he did that. You know, he killed 137 people and all this and that. Oh wow, he was really out there. He really went for it. You know? You know, then he'll be glorified because he killed people. You know, so that's the point is that its judgment is only coming from how we give the weight to it, rather than what scriptures give the weight. Right? So scriptures are defining the actual religion. But we can take an aspect of that and emphasize it. You know, it's just like within Varnashram, means you have the social structure. You can act on the Paramahamsa platform. If not, you want a structure, then you work within Varnashram. Within Varnashram, then you'll see is the Brahmins' values, how they'll deal, be different from the Kshatriyas, different from the Vaishyas, different from the Shudras. So, for the Shudra, that he is known and famous and everybody's glorifying him and all that, that's like the pinnacle. But like for the Brahmins, then they wouldn't like that. Right? You know, by hearing it, they know, okay, things are going good, they do that, but personally, it's they don't like it. Kshatriyas also, they just see, okay, people are surrendered and things like that, so that's good, but otherwise, personally, they don't need it. Vaishyas, then, you know, they'll roll with it, no problem. And Shudras, it's a necessity. Right? Does that make sense? So you're going to have breakdowns within all this. So you have to be able to appreciate that the laws governing the science of nature and how it works, that's given in the Shastras. So Manusamhita is the social science and its laws. That's what's there, because this is the way it works. We may accept it or not, but that's the way it works. Because the modes of nature, that's how they function. You function, you do one thing, you get the reaction. You follow according to the scriptures, you get a good reaction. You follow not according to scriptures, you get a bad reaction. So that's sin and piety. So attachment to either of those is going to get in the way of devotional service. And then not properly dealing with the Lord and the Vaishnavas, that's where then you run into offenses.
Right.
Right?
We hear that when you die on a battlefield in a religious war, you go to heaven. So when the people die on the battle, like something that's not religious, just one person, two people fighting or whatever on the battlefield, do they still go to heaven?
I would doubt it.
Sorry?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Like that. You may say an individual's doing it out of his duty and all that, then
yeah.
But that'll be the individual.
Yeah.
But otherwise, then it's just unfortunate. You know, it's just part of their you know reactions from the past. Yes.
If a person is not a devotee, like a carny, kind of do these offenses, is it considered offense from them as well? Or,
why not?
And then they get the poor reaction.
Means the point is it'll just be harder for them to come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Just like one devotee who went to Prabhupada for the blessings to leave Prabhupada and Krishna consciousness and go and accept a different guru outside. You know, some bogus like that. And Prabhupada says, yes, I give you the blessing that for 1,000,000 lives you won't meet a bona fide guru. Yeah, so it has its reaction. Point is offenses, as we see here, get in the way of us becoming devotional. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that sins, piety, you can get rid of those at an earlier stage. You know, mistakes in practice of devotional service, we can get rid of those in an early stage. Like that. But the offenses, they take longer. So they're the ones that actually really retard the advanced levels of devotional service. The other ones, if you're sincere, it'll get rid. It means you'll progress anyway. But it just means they don't get cleared until then. So that's why you have to be careful of them. Because otherwise, then, we see in Chaitanya Charitamrita people taking up the chanting of the holy name, and immediately there, you know, these symptoms, crying in ecstasy and hair standing on end, are immediately there. So, in other words, Jagai and Madai were sinful, not offensive. Yes.
So Maharaj, it's mentioned in the Prabhupada mentions several places that the guru has to be careful to not make the disciple guru avatya, in the sense that if he is putting something on the disciple which is too much for the disciple crumbles or gets into problems. So it seems that the guru can do that, can happen. And if it happens and the disciple then gets, you know, seriously overloaded or disturbed, or then, I mean, emotionally, the disciple might tend to make that vocal or complain or cry or whatever.
Right.
So these offenses, are they, Krishna is considering them as heavy as if you are just carelessly.
But when is that the people don't have free will?
No.
They don't have any free will.
People have free will.
Yes. So the whole point is if they have free will, you don't have to do that.
No, but then you get in trouble with the third offense, no? You disobey the order of the spiritual master.
The point is that spiritual master is trying to engage you in devotional service, but you have a choice whether you want to be involved or not. So the spiritual master then seeing your position then engages you, but within that you can still accept that or not. And then because even that he's giving some adjustments and you don't accept that, and then the natural thing is are we ever wrong? If something goes wrong in our lives, is it actually our fault or it's the situation and other people and all that? It is our fault, but how are we going to look at it? Everybody, yeah, so therefore we'll say, oh, the spiritual master was too strict, he was too this and too that, but was he? So many other devotees went through all these, the same thing, and they came out fine. And it's like one devotee saying he went to the temple, and when he went to the temple, then, you know, how the devotees, you know, just what they do, you know, you know, they don't necessarily dress so nicely. They don't know how to put on a dhoti. You know, one side's high, one side's low. You know, the bat's sticking out of the front. You know, something like that. The copan sticking out the back or something. You know, or, you know, like this. Or, you know, somebody's in the corner chanting, jumping up and down like a madman. And because of that, they got put off. And then it took them another, you know, year and a half, 2 years before they took up Krishna consciousness because the lack of the culture and the presentation and all this and that. But the point is whose fault is that? they're looking at it, I'm perfectly normal, fine person, and they were below the standard, that's why I wasn't attracted. Rather than, no, I'm too sinful that I was not attracted by the absolute truth. That won't be accepted. Because you can say as no was that, but then if that was the case, why is it anybody joined? Thousands and thousands of people joined despite everybody not being culturally very organized. Because they accepted the pure philosophy, the pure teaching. It answered the question. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Is that why you joined the ski club? Because, you know, how you say that they wore the same kind of clothes you wear. So that's why you joined the ski club. Right? I walk around on the street, and when I go join the ski club, everybody wears the same thing. In fact, when we go out skiing, we still, you know, wear our, what do you call it, those hush puppy, you know, how you say, little boots and all that. When I ski, I just clip them into my skis, and, you know, it's the same thing, right? You know, like that. You know, so nothing changes, right? Isn't it? Yeah. So that's why I joined the club, because they dressed like I dressed. So this idea is that, oh, because the devotees dress like the karmis dress, that's why the karmis join. No, that's bogus. You know? So I forget where it was. There was one place where some devotees were telling me they went someplace. There were three of them. Then they went to some place, and it was during, I think, the marathon. So everybody else is out in the karmi clothes and all this and that. And these three devotees just went, you know, shaved heads, dhotis, tilak, the whole thing. And then, as time went, it started to be noticed by the devotees who were wearing the karmi clothes, because, oh, you have to wear karmi clothes, otherwise the karmis will be put off, and they'll think it's too weird, and they'll be fanatic, and this and that. And, you know, they have a whole long list of reasons why they have to wear karmi clothes. One of the lists is not, I feel more comfortable in karmic clothes. I like karmic clothes. It's not on the list, but, you know, whatever it is. It's one of the So then they started noticing that the devotees wearing the dhotis and all that were getting more attention, more books. People wanted to take pictures with them, and, you know, they'd sell a book and then take a picture and do the whole thing like that. You understand? So it just goes, it militates against their you know, bogus understanding. They come up with the idea that, you know, it's like that. People don't join a religious because everyone, you know, people be interested in Buddhism because Buddhists wear, you know, t-shirts and cargo shorts and flip-flops. Is that why people take up Buddhism? You know what I'm saying? People are Catholics because the Pope, you know, goes around in sunnies and, you know, jeans. You understand? So this whole thing is like that. You know, even you go to a commune, you know, if they all look like everybody in the city, you know, you go back to the city. Right? You know, if they're not making daisy chain, you know, how you say, little garlands and putting them in their hair and dancing in circles and, you know, like that with luck. You know what I'm saying? You know, the hippie girls, they didn't wear miniskirts. They wore long, flowing down to the ground, or, you know, at least below the knee kind of things, because it's flowing and it's just matched the natural look. Of course, they went commando, but, you know, hey, that's another thing. Does that make sense? Mm. You know, so that's the whole thing. It's different. That's why people do it. Because if it's the same as you, what's the difference between what you're doing and what they're doing? And what you're doing is boring you to death. You're looking for something different. You know? What would happen if every restaurant you went to had exactly the same menu, exactly the same food, exactly the same taste? You know, that's why you go to the restaurant, because it's exactly the same. If I go to that restaurant because it's just like I cook at home. You understand? So where does this philosophy come from? Oh, no, unless we wear karmic clothes, then they won't like us and things like that. It's one thing is that, you know, that means if you wear a dhotis and that, the security comes along and tosses you out. Okay, then you wear karmic clothes. You know, it takes them a little longer to find you. You know, that's a consideration, because it's about distributing the books, not about, oh no, if we wear like this, then people will be put off. These are just attachments being expressed in the form of philosophy to make it look as if it's not attachment, because attachment by us is considered bad. Right? So we try to cover our attachments by making it into a philosophy. Somebody says.
So in case you get an instruction which is, according to me, beyond my level.
So, but the point is beyond your level. But are you satisfied to just be at your level?
No.
So then, are we not striving for something?
No.
Like Prabhupada Lord Chaitanya said, you know, every town and village. Now we're going to go, oh, that's way beyond our capacity and all this. We can't do that. Or that's what we endeavor for. We do something to move it forward. A few more villages. You know, it may take, you know, hundreds of years before every town and village. You know, so is there not a goal? Or is there not something to strive for? You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Srila Prabhupada to preach in the West. That was in 22. He didn't go till 66. So it was something you strive for. Does that make sense? That's there. Something that doesn't match means, let's say, you're someone who can do puja all day and you're not very good in public environments, and so then you're supposed to be out in this public environment instead of doing the puja. That would be more of a thing. But if it's seen that you're a pujari and you do that, but you don't deal with anybody properly, then by going out in the public environment, you have to start to learn how to deal with people, and then that will help your puja. So the point is if you don't understand it, then you ask, inquire. You know, this is how you feel your nature is, and this is what it is, and this is how you feel it doesn't match, and then they can explain it to you how it does match. Or if there's considerations that they weren't looking at, then they can adjust it. So. In Skanda Purana, Prabhashakanda, the name of Krishna is said to be his sarup, giving the results of all the Vedas for those who chant. The name of Krishna is sweeter than the sweetest, the most auspicious of all things auspicious, the highest fruit in the tree of all the Vedas, and is composed entirely of pure consciousness. O best of Bhrigu's dynasty, hear once with faith or in neglect, heard once with faith or in neglect, it can deliver any human being. Prabhashkanda, Skanda Purana. The name is the Surup of the Lord. This is made clear in Narada Pancharatra. It is clear that the Lord, Narayana, is directly in the mouth in the form of the eight-syllable mantra. So that's, that would be Narada Pancharatra. Mundaki Upanishad describes Panava. Om it yetad aksharam idam sarvam. Om is everything. Chandogya Upanishad says, Omkara evedam sarvam. Om is everything. There is nothing compared to Om. It is considered Supreme Brahman. It has no beginning or end. Nothing is beyond it. Nothing can compare to it. It is imperishable. Om is the beginning, middle, and end of everything. Knowing Om, one attains the Lord. Know that Om is the Lord situated in everyone's heart. Understanding that it is all-pervading, the wise man does not lament. It is without measure and of infinite measure. It is all auspicious, destroying duality. He who knows Om is the only wise man. Mundakya Karika 26-29. Oh, that's Mandukya, excuse me. One should not think that this is just praise of Om, thinking the syllables unsuitable for the Supreme Lord. Like other avatars, Om is an avatar of the Lord in the form of syllables. It is to be accepted on the strength of Shruti that Om is non-different from the Lord. The name and the Lord designated by the name, Namni, are non-different. Nama Chintamanis Krishnas Chaitanya Rasavigraha Purna Shudho Nitya Mukto Bhinatvan Nama Namino. The name of the Lord is Chintamani. It is Krishna himself. a form of consciousness and rasa. It is complete, pure, and eternally liberated, since there is no difference between the name and Krishna himself, Padma Purana. The meaning is this. The name is Chintamani, since it bestows everything. Not only that, it is directly Krishna. Having consciousness like him, the reason is that it is non-different from him. Quote, how can such a name be generated in the senses of a human? End quote. So that's the doubt, right? It does not arise from the senses, since it, like the Vedas, is simply made manifest in the senses of human by the Lord himself. So it's not that, how can this, it's just syllables, how can it be the Lord? Because the Lord appears in this form. So it's not that the senses of the human being, which are mundane, they can only perceive the Lord because the Lord reveals himself. That's the whole point. Yes, because otherwise then you are just dealing with syllables. You know, it's just like, let's say, if the Karmis do a Hare Krishna Kirtan, but they haven't gotten the name from the devotees. But because it's recommended of the Vedas to chant, it will be a pious activity. So they'll get pious benefit from it. But it's only when they hear it from devotees, and then they're chanting, then it becomes spiritual. So now if they've heard from devotees, and now from that, now they're chanting, then now others will get benefit also. The spiritual benefit. Does that make sense? The sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend and manifests on different levels within the prana, mind, intelligence, and senses. The Vedic sound is unlimited and deep like the ocean. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:21-36. Right? So how sound works and the levels that it does, it manifests and all that, then that's all going to be different. So we're just worried about that, but it's also the intelligence is there, the mind is there, it has its original position. So all that's, it's a whole science in itself. But the point is the Lord then is that when it is seen, heard in parampara with faith. Right? Does that make sense? Even if you hear without faith, if you've heard from parampara, it mentions you'll be liberated. Yes.
Regarding this
particular point, chanting the Vedas. Yes, exactly.
Chanting the holy name, as mentioned, at different levels. So, in the beginning, we chant the name through senses, like chanting the tongue, and then that is being added, and then it penetrates deeper and deeper into the prana, into our consciousness.
No. That it's talking about how sound works.
But it is about how sound works. Can we apply the same thing for chanting the holy name also?
Yeah, but at what level are you chanting?
At the senses, and then we try to absorb the mind and intelligence also.
That's there. That's the point, is because you're hearing, therefore, if you haven't heard, how will it be in the mind? How can you analyze it with the intelligence? Right? So without hearing, that these others don't. So that's after hearing. What there is that at different levels within all these things is that you're talking about, the whole point is that it's going through the chakras, the sound. So there's nod, you want to say something. So it's there in the mind, but it's only manifest as nod in the first chakra. Like that, the concept. Right? And then from there it moves to the second chakra, then it moves to the third, there it takes on the third chakra, it'll take on the aspect of the activity it does, the fourth chakra will take on the form, like that, and then the fifth chakra, that's what we know is the spoken sound, that's where you hear. Then from that, now we can go to the mind and intelligence. Mm-hmm. So that's what he's saying, it's a very subtle aspect like that, because they're talking about how can it manifest in the senses, because it's working on these levels of the chakras and all this kind of thing. So how can you say it's spiritual?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. The Vedas, which are spread everywhere by me, because I possess many forms, pervade everywhere as Brahman, and possesses unlimited powers, are perceived by the wise as nod within all beings, subtle as the threads within the lotus stalk. right? Because we're saying there, because it's not. It's the eternal sound is there. And so all the sounds that you could make then are going to be in the universal form. And so it's just a matter of them manifesting. Mm-hmm. Like
not,
that.
Not
as primordial sound. Mm-hmm. Means that is also, means that's the source of it. Om is everything. So Om is there. So it's coming from that. They're all sounds coming from there. Can we say Om is the impersonal? You can't say on one level, but at the same time as Om is made of three syllables. And so how's that impersonal? You're saying that it spreads everywhere. That's the impersonal aspect. What's spreading everywhere? That's the personal.
In this sense, when we say personal or impersonal, that's what we started from. If we don't consider the personal aspect of Krishna in relationship,
right,
we can say that even Krishna mantra can be impersonal.
Means Krishna will reciprocate with you no matter what position you're at. So if you're dealing with him in an impersonal way, he'll reciprocate that way. Mm-hmm. But the point is when you start dealing on the personal platform, that's then when the difference comes up. Is that something?
Mahaprabhu's praying Nam Namaka Akari Bahuda Nija Sharva Saktis. So all the Shaktis are there in the names because Lord invested the name with those Shaktis.
Yes. Because it's the name is, as it mentioned in the previous one, it's his Sarup. Like that. So it'll naturally have all these aspects. Yes. Exactly. So it's not that it comes there, and it's just like the impersonal Brahman is just a feature of Krishna, the person. His all-pervading as Paramatma is a feature of Krishna. So it's the person, the origin of all this. That's the point. So the difficulty comes up is that we're used to, because of the mundane consciousness, that the farthest down spiritual comes for us is the impersonal. You know, the personal and the concept of Paramatma. But that the Lord is eternal, the Lord is all-pervading, the Lord's all-knowing, you know, like this, unchanging. That's all the more we can appreciate. In other words, even though it is, we're appreciating the spiritual, that's all the more Krishna will reveal himself. So even to understand that is only by Krishna's grace, but someone working on the platform of Karma Gyan can appreciate this. Without actually coming in contact with bhakti. But only by bhakti can you know the person. By conditioning, all living entities are impersonal. Because even we talk personal, God's a person, we're talking about him being a person as Paramatma. He's a person, but then, okay, he's a person. What is God like? It's not about that. You understand? So that's the difficulty, is that it's personal, but it's impersonal. It never actually gets to personal. It has that personal touch, but it always moves back. Like you say, the yogis meditate on the super soul. So they either move forward to bhakti and accept it as a person, or they will go back into impersonal. There's no... they won't stay in that position in the middle. Because for us, if you talk about Brahman Paramatma, we'll move forward to Bhagavan. Does that make sense? But for others who are not Vaishnavas, they'll always move back to the impersonal.
So can we say, if we look at the Lord as we meet him, then he is Paramatma. And then if we look at him as he is, then he is Bhagavan.
Yes, basically you can say it like that. So, even though we may, by habit, deal with him as Paramatma, we're trying to deal with him as Bhagavan.
Yes.
And Krishna will reciprocate that. Does that make sense? So that's why we'll move forward to Bhagavan realization. Even though we may be dealing on the lower levels. Does that make sense?
Because I was trying to explain this to the students, and they couldn't catch that subtle point. What's the difference, because we worship Bhagavan.
Yes.
But we deal with him on a completely different level.
The easiest way to deal there is bring in the aspect of Bhagavan, but we're dealing with him as Lakshmi Narayan. It's a matter of majesty. It means we're going to Mangalartik and doing the puja because we're supposed to. On our own, would we be enthusiastic about six offerings, six artiks a day? No. Like that. So it's due to the rules that we're following. You know, because it's basically the same answer between the spontaneous devotional service and Vaidhi. It'll be the same kind of aspect. It's because he's God, that's why we're doing it. But we understand God's a person, so then it'll be mixed. We'll go that way, generally. The impersonal, the Brahman level, we're not so good at. You know, socially we try to apply it, but we don't see it in philosophy very much because we get distracted too easily. But so we'll take the Paramatma and the Bhagavan aspect. We're moving between there. So at least nothing else. We'll work on that because the Yadus, they're dealing with Krishna as Paramatma. But he's a person, they're interacting with a person and everything like that. But it's more about their duties, what they do and how they interact and everything like that, rather than starting from what pleases Krishna. It means they'll do how it pleases Krishna as God, but how it pleases him as an individual person. That's the uniqueness of Braja Bhakti, because that's the only place where it's actually doing that fully. But at Dorka, they're dealing with Bhagavan, but it does have the Vaikuntha aspect to it. Does that make sense? So even though in Vaikuntha, they're dealing with him as Bhagavan, it means they're dealing with Bhagavan, their interaction is more as Paramatma. Right? Braj, it'll be he's Bhagavan as Bhagavan. Right? And then Dwarka will be in between the two. It'll have a bit of both. Right, and then the Shanta Bhaktas, you see, then that has that aspect of being the absolute truth, but he's a person. He's a person, but they're appreciating the absolute truth aspect of that person. Does that make sense? So it's basically, you can say, being very general here, that the Shanta Ras will be, they're worshipping Bhagavan, but appreciating how he's the absolute truth. Then you'll find Vaikuntha, then or Dasya, then they're worshiping him, worshiping the person Bhagavan, but appreciating his you know supremacy, how he's the supreme, you know, the authority, the supreme person, how he's God, right? And so then it's only in the friendship, parental, and conjugal that is basically it's about him as the person. You know, does that make sense? So that's why you see is that when they're discussing the rasas, these five rasas, that's rasa. But then you'll see is then, but at the same time is then when we're talking about seriously about rasa, then we're just talking about the four because there's the sense of possession. But then we're talking about it more than that's that than in Braj, then they talk about the three. Means the other two are there, but the prominence is it's the cowherd boys take out the cows and go into the forest.
Right.
The gopis go into the forest.
Yes.
Mother Jashoda then deals with the cows and you know things like that. So the context of the Shanta and Dasya is always in relationship to the other three. You don't see that they stand on their own. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? That's in Braj. So yes.
So can we say that Aprakrit actually is connected to Braj Bhakti? It doesn't connect with Vaikuntha, just based on the previous explanation.
You could say yes, but it's the source of Vaikuntha, because the point is that when you're dealing in Braj, you have the Icha Shakti, right, of pleasing Krishna, the Prayojana. Now, the Sambandha Avideya aspects of it, the Jnana and Kriya, you have to have the knowledge, the situation that you're in, and operating the situation to get the results that you're trying to please Krishna with.
Yeah.
So in Vrindavan, the focus is more on the Icha.
Right.
But as you go down into and the others are used, but the focus is there. But when you get down to the Vaikuntha, you're using Jnana and Kriya to please Krishna. But in Braj, you're pleasing Krishna and engage in the jnana and kriya. It's just reversed how you're looking at it. That's why saying that Krishna is the origin of Vishnu or Vishnu is the origin of Krishna, both can work depending upon the mentality. That of majesty, yes, it does work the other way. Because you're seeing the majesty of the Lord, and one of his opulences is that of Vrindavan Krishna. Right? For some sense. But the point is that Vrindavan Krishna is the source of Mahanarayana.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yes.
So if the devotees, they are aware of this concept of Krishna being Bhagavan, but still in different dealings they deal with Krishna on Paramatma level or Brahman level. The other religions, like you say, Abrahamic or some indigenous people or like that, how do they perceive God in each level?
In that thing, you're going to look at it basically by consciousness, mm-hmm. the levels of consciousness, because they're going to be, because unless they're Vaishnav, they're going to be within karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. Right? World religions and all that, they're working with God, but within the context of karma and jnana. It's not about going to God's place. It's about getting benefit from God, either getting heavenly pleasures or liberation. So God's just the guy in charge of that. So you got to make the guy in charge happy. But it's just like this. Familiar with the Old Testament?
Yeah.
Okay. So then on the second page, at the top of the page in the first column, maybe it's more down towards the middle, then you're going to have the verse where it talks about Adam and Eve are walking with God. Hmm. Right? And he's given them all the, you know, fruits and flowers and this and that in the fields and everything like that. Right? And that's for their food. They're walking with God. Okay. Now, then they figure out, they develop mundane consciousness. Right? And so now God being displeased, then they don't belong there anymore. So then they have to leave there. And so then having left there, and then coming down, and Adam and Eve then, you know, take up their residence in the local area, and they marry their sons off to the local girls, right? Because they're the first two humans, but when they leave the garden, there's a whole community of people they can marry their sons to. So they're not quite understanding full technical heat. Now, when it goes into there, now, anywhere else that they're talking about in the Bible and people are going into the practice of these things, when they go to heaven, what's the relationship with God?
Also enjoying that.
But is God mentioned?
No.
God's there in his big chair. You know, it's always an armchair because he has to, I guess, rest his arms there. You know, and so then judgment day comes and all the souls rise up and all that, and they're all standing there, and then he either points to the right or the left, and they either go eternally to heaven or hell. Then they walk around God, right, and then go through the gate to heaven. Is there any other mention of God again? No. So they're just going for the heavenly planets. They're not actually going for the spiritual realm. Understand? So that's the difficulty, is they're not talking about the spiritual realm. Otherwise, why wouldn't they be in the garden again, walking with God again? Because there, when it's first explained, it's them walking with God. It's not that they're having a party on their own.
So walking means sangha, or?
Of course. You can't walk with someone if you're not there with them. You know, God stays in the chair, you know, and so you walk around inside. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. On that, or is it something on that, or is it something else? Because if it's something else, then we'll continue. We're past time now.
When I hear of the descriptions of God in Christianity, it seems to align with Lord Brahma, the secondary creator.
Means there's a mix because they don't really know what they're talking about there. Right? Because they're not really dealing with much. Because if you deal with what's there, then you can see is that you're dealing with something there. So you do have the aspect that they consider him, the God mentioned there is Demiurge. That he's the Demiurge. And so it would be more like Brahma. And so that's why some people take it seriously, that aspect, and yeah, trying to get back to God, and others say, no, no, it's something else, and like that. So they themselves, they've been disconnected from their philosophy for so long, they don't quite know what they're talking about. Right. But the general point is that if you present the general principles of Vaishnava philosophy, they'll accept it, because they accept the principle of God who's beyond. So talking on that level, that's why it's easier to talk on the Vedantic level. Then they'll accept it. Because it's kind of like they kind of have, but kind of don't. It's kind of mixed up in that. Because otherwise you have the whole of creation in one and a third page. You know? So it's like there's a lot pressed into there.
The fast version.
Yes, the fast version. And even then, people don't want to read it, right?
Just a funny thing that they're so confused about God that one theologian came up with the idea that God is disabled because he's sitting in a chair with wheels on it.
Where'd the wheels come from?
That's what it's a wheelchair, basically.
Old guy.
Yeah, okay, because he's so old he needs a wheelchair. Okay, yeah. That's what happens when you spend too much time alone. These theologians have that. That's part of the occupational hazard.
If you were in a wheelchair, that he should be also.
Yeah, yeah.
That theologian was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, yes. I heard that. And I'm sure, Hawkins would probably agree with all that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.